Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March has never changed anything.
Woo!
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm, feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still building on. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, William Waylon and boy. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the Corps. Between the Hank Williams pain song, Jerry Jeff train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
All right, today, wait a minute, hit the wrong thing. Okay, today we're going to get into Housing Deserts Part 1, and we're going to do a Tiny Town feature, which we do every day. We're up to number 21. Oh, doggone it. Where were we? Going back to Lucanbach, Texas. Oh, let's see. Well, since we got twisted around here. Oh, wait a minute. Somebody's got their hand up. Area code 813. Your mic is open.
Good morning. I'm just calling in, excited about hearing about these deserts. Good morning, everyone.
Affordable housing deserts. And we have a class tomorrow. I'll let you know the time. Well, let you know later today. And then let the rest of you guys know in the morning. We have is titled Your First 40 Acres. Your First 40 Acres. And that class is to prepare you if you want to buy some land. And we're talking about primarily rural land. Now, you might not start off with 40 acres, but anyway, the class is called Your First 40 Acres.
It's funny that you mentioned 40 acres, because yesterday while we were talking about it, I didn't say it to you, but I was thinking in my head, we're going to get our own 40 acres and a mule. And not just for ourselves,
right,
but for other people too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good job, Ellen.
Exactly. Now, I want to mention that me and you, Robin, discussed this yesterday. Now, out of the 108,000 towns in the United States, we already know there are 10 of them that have a population of 1 million or more people. But then there's some towns in the United States, they might not have 1 million people yet, but you need to be a millionaire to live in the town. So here, I'm gonna tell you what those 10 towns are in no particular order. If you want to get the order rankings, you can go online for that. But here are towns that you need to be a millionaire to buy a house. New York City. And we're not talking about without government programs, people. New York City, Los Angeles, California, San Jose, California, Washington, D.C., San Diego, California, Seattle, Washington, Miami, Florida, Honolulu, Hawaii, and Boston, Massachusetts. Though, if you're not a millionaire already or planning on becoming one real soon, those are 10 cities that you want to avoid. Yes, the question is.
So how did you determine that it was going to cost that much to live in those cities? What data did you use?
All right, what I did was I typed into a search engine highest housing, most expensive housing markets in the United States. And then it came back with a rankings. As a matter of fact, I may as well do it right now since we're talking about it so people can follow along. Okay. You can go to Google or Yahoo or whatever. Most expensive housing Mark, let's see, cities. In the USA. Okay, that's what I typed in. So then it goes down to Rocket Mortgage. I'm looking at the first thing, the 10 most expensive cities in the United States. Now, this is in so coming in at number one is New York City. Has a population of 8,467,513 people. The median income there is over 67,000. The median home price is $850,793. And the median monthly rent is $1,489. Coming in at number two, Los Angeles, California, the median home price is $971,257. I consider those, you got to be a millionaire. Okay. San Francisco is number three. Median home price, $1,169,125. All right. That's San Francisco. Honolulu, Hawaii comes in at number four. Median home price, $625,000, over $500,000. Coming in at number five, my hometown, Washington, D.C., $678,689. That's the median price. Boston, Massachusetts comes in at number six. Median home price, $770,797. Coming in at number seven, San Diego, California, $837,696. Coming in at number eight, I don't know if you want to find your way to San Jose, but San Jose, California, $1,312,163.
Yeah. Do you know the way to San Jose? That's the way. $1 million is the way to San Jose. That's the answer to that song.
And you have people that work in Silicon Valley, San Jose, that they commute 3 hours to get to the job and 3 hours back home because they can't afford to live in the city. They're only 24 hours in a day now. So 6 hours out of that day, they're commuting to San Jose because the homes, $1 million. Coming in at number nine, this is close to your, this is in your neck of the woods, Robin. Seattle, Washington. Population,
yeah.
733,909 people, 19 people. The median home price in Seattle. Now, they got different, because this one listens at $825,126,000. But there's another chart that lists the average selling price. And the average selling price and the median selling price are different. At $1 million, and then coming in at number 10, Miami, Florida, at $542,218. Now, let me...
Ooh. Miami and Hawaii sound like the sweet spot.
Average selling price of house in Seattle, Washington, and this. Okay, see, it all depends on who you want to listen to, right? Zillow's got it at $841,919. But then here's another one. The Seattle Times has in Seattle the median home price, home sold for $1 million. That's from the Seattle Times. I'm going with the Seattle Times figure, $1 million. In Southwest King County.
So you have to be a millionaire to live in these places.
Yes.
And we want to be very clear on the distinction. When I am saying you have to be a millionaire, I'm meaning you have to possess that wealth, not
right,
and not from a job, income from a job, that doesn't count. Does that make sense to you?
Right. Now, Robin, you live in Everett, Washington, how far is that from Seattle?
It's about 30 miles north.
All right, 30 miles north. What? All right, now in Seattle, I know you have Boeing. That's a
There's
big
Boeing
employer.
There's Boeing in Everett, too. There's Boeing up here. They've got an airport. And then there's the Snohomish River. And so even back from the time that they first settled here, there's still industry off that river, that livelihood. You know what I mean?
Okay, timber. They're still selling timber up that way.
Not so much, because Weyerhaeuser is like really, I don't even know what Weyerhaeuser is doing, but they stopped, I guess, like cultivating the land, it's particularly in Washington State, years ago.
Okay. Well, what
and they started giving
doing?
It over to developers.
What? All right, because Seattle's got over 700,000 people, knocking at the door of 1 million people. What are they, is it an entrepreneurial climate up there or what? I mean, because you need a million, I mean, and we're not even talking about other things like a car, you got to eat. House costs $1 million.
Right, it is, but see, in the United States, we send our children to the academy, and the definition of academics, if you go down, don't take the number one definition that they give you, go down and read the fourth or fifth, which tells you that academia is studying information, research for no practical intents or purposes.
Right.
So after that, no one teaches us to start a business. No one teaches us to be entrepreneurs. They don't even talk about that in school. They want to tell you,
right,
oh, now you got to go pay for a higher learning after you've gone to, after you spent, I've figured out it's about 15 years now, because they're getting them in Head Start early. If they're potty trained, they can go to Head Start.
All right. 15 years,
and out of all that time, we don't teach them, and it's across the United States, we don't teach them to be, that's why you got people resorting to criminals or criminalistic behavior and stuff like that, because just as easy as they could, if you can sell dope, imagine what else you could sell if you put your head to it. Because it does take a certain intelligence to be a dope dealer. I'm not giving that no props, but I'm just saying. You know? And so if anybody took those skills, and applied them to own the best thing for anybody is to own. And the best way to own something is to create it or build it. Okay? So that's why that's some of the information that you'll be getting when you come to our classes now.
Now, well, yeah, which is going to develop into academy, instead of using the word academy, using our theorists, what do you think is a better word than academy?
Knowledge is power, so let me see. Shoot, the knowledge out of me. You know, I don't know, but anything,
well,
you know, but that, call it a class, call it a course, call it a university.
Okay, all right. Well, we're working on that part. Now,
you know,
before we go to other calls, all right, today or
the workshop.
Yeah, our feature town for today, we're up to 21. Tiny town, no one, because Seattle's a big town. The feature town for today of our tiny towns, we're up to tiny town number 21, is Pioneer, Iowa. Pioneer, Iowa. Pioneer, Iowa has a population of 4 people, and it's on 38 acres of land, and the original industry to that town, the economic interest of that town, was cutting grass. Now, not your typical grass that you find in your backyard, but they were cutting out, well, you know what, I'm going to read it in a moment. So you can follow along if you type in on any search engine, Pioneer, Iowa, population 4. It's on 38 acres of land. And remember, tomorrow our topic will be an introduction to a course we'll be having titled Your First 48. All right. So Pioneer, Iowa is an unincorporated community in Humboldt County, Iowa, United States. Population 4 at the time of the 2020 census. It elected to unincorporate as a municipality in 2020. Okay, and let's see. Now we want to get to the history of Pioneer. All right, I got to put that into a search engine. Pioneer, Iowa history. Yeah, here we go, history. Okay, Pioneer Town. Here we go, I found it. Pioneer Town, Pioneer, Iowa Town History, Humboldt County. Let's see. Of all the towns and villages in Humboldt County, Pioneer is the most unique, has the most unique beginning. Later, it was to have the unique distinction of being the greatest grain center and having the largest elevators in the county. In 1881, the Hay Press Company purchased the property, which is now the town of Pioneer. All right, the reason for the purchase was not to farm, but to cut prairie grasses, bale them, and ship the bales to cities in the east. So they were cutting grass. All right. Under the management of George B. Waller, the business began in the fall of 1882. The hay camp at Pioneer was to be the largest business of its kind in the Midwest state, which is Iowa. The first railroad line to service Pioneer, Iowa, was the Rock Island Railroad. Before the actual cutting could start, the company needed a press building where large quantities of loose hay could be processed. The building was constructed on the northwest corner of the interstate of east of Pioneer. The building measured 40 by 120 feet. Also, two large barns were constructed to store the baled hay while they awaited shipping. The storage barns were located near the railroad siding for ease of loading. One barn was 50 by 100, and the second barn was 40 by 60. The two barns had a combined capacity of 1,500 tons of baled hay. The vast acreage of prairie grass was harvested. So they basically saw whoever put this together, the town founder here. You know, imagine how many people walk past, horse and buggy past this 38 or whatever acres it was. Just nothing of it at all. But then somebody said, you know what? We can take this grass, cut it, and sell it. And that's what they did. And they had the pioneering spirit. Let's see. Horses were used for power on the baler because using steam would have presented extreme fire danger. Okay, let's see. Having a crew, all right, the crew of workers needed for operation to Salisbury. At full capacity, the crew would process about 30 tons a day. The hang crew lived and had their meals at a boarding house. There were also three other dwellings in the town. So they, now we see a golden pattern here that you got an economic activity, in this case, cutting the grass to make hay. And then they needed a place for their workers to stay. So they built a boarding house. All right. There were also three other dwellings in town. See how simple this stuff starts out at? This is like really simple stuff. All right. Let's see. Later on, they hired a cook. For the men. Let's see. In 1930, the census shows that in 1910, there was a population of 92 individuals in Pioneer, Iowa. Okay, in 1882, J.M. Anderson opened up a general store to accommodate the needs of the hay camp crew. The same year, the Pioneer Hotel was erected by J.J. Hartenbauer. August Minnie-Zerbs purchased the boarding house from Hartenberger in 1895. Okay. Let's see. Apparently that ran for quite a number of years. They had a town hall. All right, in 1893, the Wisconsin Lumber Company opened up business there in Pioneer, Iowa. Okay. Anyway, they've had their ups and downs in Pioneer, Iowa. They've even had a bank there, Farmers Savings Bank. Anyway, the town still exists. It's still happening. Population of four, but it started by cutting grass to make hay. Then a boarding house. Then they needed housing for the workers. Then they even had their own school, Pioneer School. So if I go, you go to our Facebook page, and I've got some of these pictures on there. That's our feature for today. Pioneer Hour, our 21st feature, we do one a day, at least one a day. All right, so let me find my way back to the studio. And like I say, tomorrow podcast, we're going to introduce a class that we'll be offering. Actually, it'll probably turn into a course, but we'll introduce it to on tomorrow's podcast. And it's titled Your First 40 Acres. And just to nip something, brother, now we're not going to be dealing with, we're going old school on this. Won't have anything to do with the government or government programs or nothing like that. We're taking our cues from these tiny towns that have, most of which are over 100 years old, and we're taking their information, and we're, so that'll guide us on where to look for land, our own 40 acres. And you might not start with 40 acres. You might start with 1 acre or less. But it'll help you get to your first 40 acres. So that's tomorrow's podcast, your first 40 acres. And then we'll announce where, because we'll have Zoom classes, Facebook classes, and we'll have offline tours, Zoom classes, and then we'll have offline tours so you can get a firsthand. And they're going to be in various locations, but we'll announce that, boots on the ground locations. But the basic stuff we're going to give online as soon as tomorrow. So with that, 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A., and good morning. Good morning. I didn't catch the lady's name that is doing the academy. I was going to offer a suggestion to a name there, maybe Innovation Institute.
Oh, okay, that's good. Institute, all right.
Or
we'll
innovation
put in a,
engine.
We'll put in a hopper. Yeah.
I can accept that. But that's at peace in the pit of my stomach. Institute, Innovative Institute. I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome. I didn't catch your name, ma'am.
So what do you got for us this morning, Chris?
This is Robin Lynn.
Oh, okay.
Well, I know it's you,
right,
Robin. Yeah.
He said he didn't know who he was speaking to.
Yeah, I didn't know who I was speaking to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. No, here's this Robin.
No, I love it. No, this is, you know, this is wonderful. This is what it's about, right? So you guys have been teaching, and, you know, to me, this is an institute. You know, just this podcast alone, there's so much content that you've put in to this show over, what, 2,300 episodes? You know,
yep.
To me, that's a masterclass.
Well, it took that long to find out where our niche is. Which is, like I say, I'm getting a lot of ideas from the, and encouragement and empowerment from these little towns that have been around for quite a while. And it's stuff that anybody can do. You know, so.
I agree, and you know that the length about it.
Yeah, so forget about, I'm sure Seattle, Washington, and, you know, those top 10 towns, you basically have to be a millionaire to live in those places now. But, you know, you got over 100 other thousand ways you can go, including you can start your own. So I figure, you know, hey, man, start your own.
Well, you know, we were talking about the community every month the other day, and I had a conversation yesterday with El Paso, Illinois, to do a tiny village of 25 homes, and three affordable housing units. And when I was done, it wound up being six affordable housing units. And so they were very happy to know that I was even doubling what they needed for affordable housing for a three-bedroom situation.
Right.
And I'm going to go get the 25 frames, and I'm going to work the program here in Bloomington where they're going to pay the people to come out and spend a day, $350, and they're going to frame the homes. We're going to film it all, and they're going to go right down the street 20 miles, and it's going to end the homeless problem in this city. But they were very receptive to it last night. Yesterday, they loved it, and they told me something that they did. There was a family where the man had a stroke, and he lost 90% of his body. They got behind on bills. The man that owned the house said, "I'm not going to evict you. I'm just going to sell the house." So the people in the city stepped up and bought it yesterday. So these people are not being displaced. So this city is actually stepping up and want to fix their problems and let people know that they're not alone, and, you know, we are a community. So it was a very beautiful thing that happened yesterday with seeing this community step up and spend $150,000 to buy a home to keep a family from becoming homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, there was a lot of people in the city just stepped up, and they all kicked in some money, and they bought the house. So, but they're also now looking at buying 25,000.
What's the price on the house? What's the price on the house?
The house they bought yesterday was $150,000.
Okay.
But that was just one home and that situation.
So wherever you go, continue to connect with the social service agencies, particularly the YWCA, the YMCA, because they have funding, and they will provide funding, right? So they don't. If you go in and tell them that you've got a program and you're trying to do this, they will come in and they will say, "Well, hey, we have a program and we've got people in these programs that are displaced, such as in their shelters, you know, or returning or the homeless that they're trying to serve." So connect with your social service agencies, anything for the greater good of the community, and don't be afraid to go up to your municipalities and cities and government agencies and demand that they step in and help, you know, because this guy, he's lived in his house, he's paid his mortgage, he's paid his insurance. And just because of a health, right? And then to get any kind of help, Medicaid or like that, they make you spend down or give up your housing or your assets in order to receive Medicaid. And that, we need to demand that stops too. Why do we have to be destitute and become destitute just because we're elderly and aging and, you know, maybe on our way out with some illnesses? Yeah, so good job, the both of you.
Well, I'm looking at mortgage payments here. The mortgage payment on $1 million house, and that's $1 million even, a 30-year mortgage, you're going to pay over, your monthly note is going to be over $4,700 a month.
And that doesn't make, it doesn't make sense to me because of the fact that you have to continue to pay taxes. So if you don't pay the taxes, then you'll lose your property, your land, your building. And so it's hard
that's why I recommend people look at, because they're out here, recommend, well, like I said, looking at the landscape, we've got 108,000 towns across the United States. And then, but let's look at the towns where people are going broke, the towns where you have the most homelessness are municipalities. Now, let's go to the basic distinctions of townships in the United States. You have municipal townships, and those, it's about five to seven fundamental types. Municipal townships, which most people are familiar with, all right, they offer municipal services. They have a police department, fire department. They have a school system, or at least a school. They have, I already said fire department. Social services office. So those are municipal services that you have to pay. The citizens of that town pay for it a lot through property taxes. So it's more at water services, even electric. So in those towns, to deliver those municipal services, it's going to cost you more money. Those are municipal townships. Now, that's just one flavor. You also have unincorporated towns in the United States. All right, like the one we read most. I'd say a lot of towns we read on here so far are not even municipal townships. Unincorporated, they don't have a police department. They don't have a fire department. And the citizens of that particular township, more than likely they voted, we don't need those things. They might have a volunteer fire department. And then everybody, in the town we had, four people. Well, do you really need a police department if you got four people? I mean, everybody knows everybody. You know, even with towns that might have 100 or 200 people, like Taft, Oklahoma, they probably have maybe 300, 350 people. They have a jail there that hasn't been used in decades. And the citizens of Taft, Oklahoma, said, you know what, the policeman that they did have was a lone wolf and was more like a night watchman. So they said, you know what, we don't want to pay for that because we don't really need it. And when I slept in Taft, I slept with the front door open all night. Felt perfectly safe. So there's a lot of towns like that. Now, in the United States, out of the 108,000 towns, you probably have about 19,000 or so municipalities, municipal towns. Every one of the $10 million cities that we just talked about this morning, New York, L.A., San Diego, San Jose, Seattle, Boston, all those places are municipal townships. And municipalities such as those, when you get that big in population, they have to make the payroll to pay the government employees, the meter maid, the person that reads your gas meter or electric meter. A lot of those are government or municipal employees, and municipal employees, also known as government employees, are expensive. And on top of that, if they're unionized government employees, they're more expensive, and American labor overall is expensive. So therefore, if you have a $200,000 house or $300,000 house, your property taxes are going to be anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 a year, you know, give or take, depending on which city you're in. So, you know, if you don't pay those taxes, then the city will sell your house. In order, because they got to make their payroll every 2 weeks, and those municipalities have pension funds to make. In a town that is unincorporated, you don't have those expenses. All right, so all right, you have municipal townships, unincorporated townships, you have closed townships, which there's only so many people that can get in. You have private townships that I gave the example of with Tavistock, New Jersey. They wanted to play golf. People wanted to play golf on Sundays. So in order to get, they only have 9 voters in that town. 3 households, 9 voters. They have a 400 plus membership. But to even qualify to get into that town, you need a $25,000 initiation fee. That's the second step after you get recommended by 2 members in good standing. So that's hurdle number 1, 2 members in good standing. Number 2, do you have the $25,000 initiation fee? This is a private town. Private towns are legal in the United States. I see absolutely nothing wrong with that, because anything we set up, that's going to be private. But that's another podcast. All right. And your membership fees on a monthly basis in Tavistock, New Jersey, member of that country club can range anywhere from $44,000 a month or less. All right. The next type of township that we have, we talked about municipal, unincorporated, closed, private. Number 5, homesteads. Homesteads, these are, you know, basically they got their 20 acres or 40 acres or whatever. It's family-based. You know, it's a family-type de facto township for families and their friends. Number 6, company towns. Company towns. And this off the top of my head, Hershey, Pennsylvania is a company town. Milton Hershey built it so his employees can have a place to stay. They have their own houses there. You know, they have a school there for the employees' school. Everything, keep them close. Provide everything that the workers need to be happy and sustainable, where they didn't have to commute 3 or 4 hours a day or 6 hours round trip. They didn't have to catch a plane or Amtrak. It's all right there in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Towns like that across the globe. All right. I'm sure Toyota, the world's leading manufacturer of cars, they pump out 29 cars per minute. The average car, truck, or bike that they put out has 30,000 parts, depending on what vehicle that you're working on. 29 cars per minute. I'm sure there's a Toyota village somewhere in Japan or China, wherever they have their manufacturing plants, where they have a campus, where every basic need that employee needs with Toyota, they've got it right there in that village. All right. But the reason why I do these towns, tiny towns a day, is like Everett, where Robin lives. They have over 100,000 people that live in Everett, Washington now. It didn't start off that way. Everett started with one guy that wanted some land in an area where he can build. He bought over 600 acres, and he built a cabin. And he lived by himself, but then somebody said they liked his cabin. And they, well, look, you got 600 acres. You know, can I? can you sell me an acre or a half acre or whatever he did? And it turned into Everett Washington, so it went from one to over 100,000 people. So that's why we do. Now, Luckenbach, Texas, is just 10 acres of land. Three households, but that town generates money weekly and even daily because they have a website and, you know, they have product to sell on the website. If you want to rent out the whole town of Luckenbach, Texas, you can do that for a wedding, picnic, graduation, whatever. And on weekends, they have musical events, entertainment events. So, anyway, I went off on a rant. I forgot where I started. But anyway, so tomorrow, your first 40 acres. So we want to hear what you do with your first 40, what's your first acre of your first 40 acres. And Chris, if you're still there, the, what do you call it, what's the name of the town? Hope. Hope, Georgia. They're organizing to get, I believe, 41 acres of land. So, Chris, if you can, and that's what we're about. That's what I'm talking about. We have found our identity and our niche. It took over 2,300 podcasts to find it because I was reporting on that over the years, and I even made road trips, you know, this town and that town, and then I just saw these common denominators, and I said, you know what? We can do that. So any future trips I'm making is I'm looking for acres of land where we can put up something and tell our own story, which is everybody, you know, because people have their own, you know, their own stories to tell, which, you know, because everybody's a walking library. But, Chris, are you still there? I'm trying to find out where you got to Steve. So, Chris, you there? He's working on something, even. But, Chris, when you can speak, and share with us about Hope, Georgia. And I believe
I can do that.
Chris, you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry, Chris, you there?
Yes,
all
right,
sir. So tell us about Hope, Georgia. It's, 41 acres of land or what?
Yeah, it's 41 acres of land. And we also found another property yesterday just down the road from that one. It's 51 acres, and it's half price. It don't come with five houses and all the other stuff that it has, but it does have a house, a six-bedroom home that is there, but it has 51 acres that can be developed. So we were looking at it.
And
it's
at half
41
price.
Acres. Yeah, for half price. 41 acres. It has five houses. It has a outside pavilion area and where they did weddings and different venues. And there's a barn that is a beautiful barn. It's not like an old barn that would be on a property. This is actually a beautifully updated barn. It's just not completed yet. But that property has a lake on it, and it's going to wind up we're going to utilize the barn and turn it into like a cafe situation to where we do the culinary arts, but we grow our food, everything right there on the property. And then open it up to the public so that way it can be sustaining. And looking forward to it because, you know, when we get the music going, you know, and yesterday I wound up doing an interview on a syndicated radio show that's on 150 stations with over 5 million listeners. And they want me to do another interview this coming up week, but they're going to bring in two celebrities and do some interviews where we get them involved. So I'm kind of excited to see what they come up with after what happened yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Well, you got you. All right. That sounds very promising. 41 acres with buildings on it. But then, now, me personally, I like the 51 acres half price with nothing on it.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were looking at, because it gives us so much more option of what we can do.
Exactly.
Not necessarily someone else's
right.
vision. And I think that the two of them, you know, if we get the one and we start doing the music and we raise money, we can go right down the street buy the other one. And now we have 51 acres that can be another community of
right,
affordable
well,
housing.
That's what the people with Freedom Georgia, they bought 97 acres initially with, I think 19 families, I believe. And, but after they got that one, they're up to like 502 acres now. So, you know, get what you can to start. And it doesn't have to, you know, you guys are advanced. But like now, Ansel Troy, who's been on here twice, out in Oakland, California, you can, you know, go where your budget is going if you're operating solo, because he started with his backyard, and I call it a backyard village. But he bought two tiny houses. He rents those out, makes about $9,000 to $10,000 a month. So you can start as little as a backyard. It doesn't have to be your backyard. Do you have a friend or a relative who has a backyard that's willing to let you set up a little micro village? That micro village could be, I mean, Everett Washington. Everett Washington started out with one person who was a carpenter, and he built a cabin. It started off with just one person. Some of the other towns that we've named on it start out as one person as well, like Punkyville, Kentucky, 1 acre big. Punky had a vision. Another couple out of South Dakota, a cousin and wife team, two people flipping burgers. So it's amazing what you can do with just one person. And like Ansel, if he wanted to, because I mean he's pumping out $9,000 to $10,000 a month with a backyard village. All right, which is the simplest thing to do. And then he's got $9,000 to $10,000 to play with. Let's say after expenses, you know, he can go out and he can buy a larger tract of land and multiply what he has. So those are some of the things that, you know, we'll be covering in our class, the first 48s. And also, Chris, it's impressive that, like I said, you guys didn't, you know, you found 41 acres, but then you found 51 acres. So I imagine there's some great things you guys can do with all that. Let's see. Okay. All right, that's all I've got for today. We're going to take a quick interlude to see if you guys got anything else to add, particularly from yesterday. I'm going to read over some of the notes that Connie Beasley blessed us with yesterday, right after this.
What? Like that. Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jay!
I need my money! Jake!
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jake! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me. Shit, I don't fuck. I'm winning anyway. I'm winning. I'm winning any motherfucking way. I can't lose. Shit, you can shoot me, but you can't kill me. Ah. Shit. Oh, what a day. What a motherfucking day.
Ah, that was a scene from Training Day. I see it differently now. Alonzo, played by Denzel Washington, he lived in the Los Angeles metro area. He was a LAPD detective, narcotics. And I'm not going to give away the movie for people that haven't seen Training Day, but imagine he needed that $1 million. Because he had expenses to pay. Because in L.A., you essentially have to be a millionaire to buy a house. You can buy a house. I'm going to tell you one of the industries that we're going to have. You know, I'm looking for the... Okay. Like I said, when you look at the landscape of the United States, okay, I hit the wrong button there. Okay, let me, all right, so let me repeat that because I hit the wrong button. It looks like to get ahead of the game here in the United States, you're going to have to, now this is my opinion, you're going to have to avoid living on the grid as much as possible. L.A., the 10 largest, I would say, if you can avoid living in the 108,000 towns in the United States, if you can avoid living in the top 100, actually I would say the top 1,000, if you can avoid living in the top 1,000, populated towns in the United States, provided you had the right lifestyle and lived let me see, I'm trying, all right. I'm gonna play, I hope this is the right video, I mean audio. Okay, number one, don't live directly in a New York City or Los Angeles or Seattle. Find a community like these tiny towns people have found. You know, start looking for land by the acre. I'll look at that as success clue number one. Start looking for land that you can buy by the acre that's zoned agricultural and hopefully in an unincorporated area, or if it's incorporated, in a small municipality. We haven't even reached a community of 50 people in it yet. We're up to 21 towns. We haven't even reached 50 people yet. Next thing is, once you found, because you got to find land first where you can operate legally. The next thing is, do this.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. a freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
And that's where the ball is and is going. Yeah, I mean, I use YouTube as a barometer. And I don't think homelessness will be eliminated. It could be eliminated, but I don't think it will be because of what I'm going to read off right now. Number one, particularly for municipalities, number one, you take a city like, you know, the top 10 that we stated, New York, Seattle, San Diego, those places, and many others. Here's a red flag of a city to avoid. Avoid a city that has a bankruptcy court, a United States bankruptcy court. Bankruptcy court, and that's one of the ways that the federal government earns an income. They earn an income because people declare bankruptcy and businesses declare bankruptcy. Why do people declare bankruptcy? Because they have not been educated on how to live a sustainable lifestyle or how to run a sustainable business. Now, why is that? Well, in the United States of America, on a critical mass basis, not everybody, but on a critical mass basis, we Americans, and I'm an American, We Americans are addicted, just like a crack addict, a heroin addict, any drug addict, or any alcoholic. The typical American on a critical mass basis is addicted to ultra high consumption. We also demand a lot of comfort and conveniences. We don't want to, we want to live in a place where it doesn't take too long to get to the job. Then we want that job to pay us a whole bunch of money. Then we want to go shopping. We want shopping to be close by. In New York City, you don't even need a car. But you need to be a millionaire to live in New York City, though. All right. So, but most people who live in New York City, they're not millionaires. They try to keep up. They're on the treadmill. They're in the rat race. And that's where some people who drop the ball for whatever reason in bankruptcy court and all of the cities that we named 10 this morning, and what you need to be a millionaire. In every one of those cities, you got a United States bankruptcy court. And the federal government, in my opinion, just crazy LA's opinion, no matter what they say, you know, why don't you teach people how to live a sustainable lifestyle instead of declaring bankruptcy? They have classes and books written on how you declare bankruptcy, and they got different chapters. But they don't teach in school how to avoid bankruptcy. There's no bachelor of science degree in bankruptcyology that will teach you how to avoid going bankrupt. So just my suggestion in my crazy little universe, avoid the big cities unless you're knocking down, to be honest, 25,000. You know what? We talked about this before. You need to be working out a way in which you can have a six-figure day at least once a month, or a seven-figure day once a month in your income. Because if you have at least one six-figure day a month on a consistent monthly basis, 12 in a year, you should be able to afford one of those million-dollar homes.
Okay.
And the expenses that go along with it. But we're addicted to consumption, and we're ultra, uber ultra consumption hounds in this country. We eat too much, we drink too much, we pop too many pills, and we're talking about prescription pills and over-the-counter. I mean, Prince, vegetarian. What took him out? Fentanyl. Pop one too many pills. You know, to deal with this, I guess, pain management. No judgment. I'm just, hey, that's how it is. Michael Jackson. He basically died from over-medication. I don't know what happened, but, you know, he wanted, you know, whatever he was taking, he wanted something quick. Didn't take long. He had the money to have it in his house. Don't know, but nobody really knows the backstory of what brought on his demise, you know, who was in the room, who wasn't in the room, and all this. But we know Mike's something about Michael Jackson. He wanted the comfort and conveniences that are available in the United States. And that's what took – what really killed him was the comfort and conveniences that you can have if you don't know how to use them right here in the United States. It wasn't that milky substance he took. I forgot the name of it. But what killed him was the comfort. Too much comfort, too much convenience. The majority of people there are probably homeless. If you can teach them about how to control their consumption, you know, go to Consumption Anonymous, well, I don't think there is a thing. Your large cities, they offer, I mean, every one of those cities that I mean, not All of them have a bus line. All of them have taxis. They're on Uber and Lyft. Some have subway systems. And some of those things, you don't need a car. You don't need a car, you don't need a motorbike, nothing like that. Comfort and convenience. You know, you don't need solar panels to generate your own electricity. Now, of course, if you did, you can have no electric bill. There's Alexander, Lamar Alexander, and the video's right on YouTube. Look it up, Solar Cabin. He built the cabin for $2,000 by himself. But most of us, no, we don't want to pick up a hammer. We don't want to pick up a hammer. The guy who founded Everett Washington did, and he didn't even have any power tools. When he built his cabin, there was no Home Depot, Lowe's, or Menards, or Ace Hardware store. He had to use what tools that he had. None of them were, there was no electricity for him to tap in on, no power tools, but he had the skill set to build. Now, I believe Chris Collins, he'll be teaching people how to do that because he's an educator. But, so, you know, if you want to prevent homelessness, and let me go over some of the notes from yesterday, because Connie Beasley, he presented, let me go through some of the notes, and then I'm opening up the phones again. Let's see. Well, a lot of my notes are cryptic, but bivouac, water buffalo. All right, we're gonna have to know the distinction between what is a water buffalo, permanent camp versus a temporary camp. This is when you're setting up your own town or village. Food supply, these things that we need to think about. And that's what we're going to be offering. This will all be included in your first 40 acres. Food supply, water supply, a hygiene station, infrastructure, water tanks, outdoor showers. I have here shitter detail, outhouse, male, female. What are you going to do for a mess hall? You're going to call it a mess hall, lounge area. Where are you going to place it? Is it going to be in the center of your village or town that you're developing? Pallets. There's a lot to do with pallets, you know. How you can use, where to get pallets, and then what you can use them for, including plywood. Overnight camping, how to set up a perimeter. Why you need a perimeter, shower stalls, camp kitchen, porta potties. You need to be planning months in advance on some of this stuff. Your setup time, you know, how can you get things set up within 24 hours or less? Sleeping in shifts, why you need to sleep in shifts at the early stages or even advanced stages. Training. Lister bags, water purification, how to keep the peace within your community, and false fronts. Okay, those are just some of the notes I took yesterday, and they're my notes, so we have to translate them, and we'll have him back to speak as well. And then some of this stuff we can't talk about during a regular podcast, but that's when we'll have the other Zoom meetings. But the way we're doing it is before we show people any land, we're offering the Zoom classes where you can, you know, then you have some basic knowledge and vision of what you'll be looking at when you actually go see a plot of land, and you know that'll help your decision making and all of that. So let's see.
So what if someone became unruly or criminalistic? How would that be handled?
That's a good question.
In these communities.
That's a good question. We can get back to Beasley on that, but my idea to answer your question is what we'll have, and I did a podcast on this already. We'll have passports, not United States passports. Let's say we're developing on your 2 acres, Robinville or Mavenville or whatever you want to call it. Okay. There will be, this is just a suggestion. Okay. It'll have a passport booklet that looks like a United States or any country passport booklet with Mavenville or Maven, whatever you want to call it, Mavenville or Mavenville Village or Mavenville Village passport. And then on the inside of that, it could have, just like a United States passport, it could have a photo of the person, their photo and their name and all that, and whatever else you want in that particular passport. So in order to even get in, step onto the grounds of the village, you will have that passport to identify yourself. Now, that might not be a be-all and end-all strategy to prevent somebody going left or getting out of the box, but I think it will deter people by having a passport to enter the village. Now, any other things, like I said, we can have BZ on another day, and he can give some examples of, you know, how you can prevent and or what happens. What are some of the options that can that you might have if something happens in the middle of an event. So, but what I got for you is stage one passport. That's one way to vet and to keep some of the riffraff out. It's not 100%, but I think it's a start. That's what I'll be doing with my portion. Now, what you do with your portion, that's a whole different story. But you can have a pass. I have passports for Earth, Wealth, Energy, but whatever you're going to name your village, that's up to you.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Because that's, they communities are being organized and structured all over, and you hear
right.
them addressing whatever issues, but I never hear security being addressed, and that's a big thing. Lot of these will be formed in unincorporated areas with no municipalities or police, and so you're not going to be able to dial 911. And then if you do dial 911, you're going to get a bill for it. Like,
true. And then and in some of these places, the police are not going to come. I mean, it's a distance factor with some of these places, or a manpower factor. So. Yeah, they might. Like in Presidio County, Texas. All right, you call.
Yeah, jurisdiction.
It might take, even if they leave immediately, it might take them an hour to get there. So you might get a call back an hour. Did you get it all straight? That happens. So you've got to have something in place. So I figure the first thing is, have an ID, and I, like I say, a passport system makes it an exclusive. Robinville, or whatever you want to call Robin Village, Maven Village, needs to be private and exclusive. Okay. Not anybody, you're not going to get that passport for free. That's the first thing off the top. So you're not going to get it for free. Then you're going to know who you're dealing with. So if any shit jumps off, you know, oh, okay, here's who I'm dealing with. Here's some options there. Okay. But we'll bring Beasley back. If Beasley, if you're out there listening, just press one and chime in. But, yeah, we do need to cover that. What happens if somebody, you know, gets out of hand? But I think that first, just like with Tavistock, New Jersey, in order to get into that township, you had to have recommendations from two members in good standing. And then after that, now this is from two members who had to pay a $25,000 initiation fee to even get in, and then pay $4,000 or whatever, $2,000-$3,000 a month membership to keep in good standing. So I'm not saying you have to have nothing that, you know, that high in for a country club or whatever Mavenville is going to be, but just like with the United States passport, you got to pay for that. For Robin Village passport, you got to pay some for that. Because now I've known Robin for almost 10 years now. When you give something to Robin, she multiplies it and you get something back. So stay tuned to it. So Robin is, you'll have a passport if you want. You have a pass. I recommend, like I said, for the things that we're going to do, Earth Wealth will have a passport. I'm recommending for the land that, you know, your 2 acres, and you'll get more than that, I'm sure. Have a passport system in place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest thing to do, coming from a village organizer. You know, I just went on YouTube to look up
accountability.
How to put those together.
Accountability goes a long way. Yeah, accountability goes a long way. And I'm glad that she said this, because that's one of the least mentioned things is self-control. And people exercising self-control is the best thing ever, the greatest prevention ever. So, yeah, I like it. You have to be an upstanding, card-carrying member.
Exactly, to your community. It will be a proud community. Because one of the things is like, now I went to an event out in Vermont some years ago, and, you know, somebody broke out the bottle of booze, but nobody got drunk. Nobody even got tipsy. If they got tipsy, nobody showed it. But in some places, you might not want to have alcohol. Because some people, they can't handle alcohol. So, and that could cause a situation. Because you got some drunks, tipsy, they go to sleep. All right? But then some people, when they get drunk, or get tipsy, they become mean drunks. So, you know, how do we diffuse that situation? You know, so those are things that we're going to cover, you know, community specific and whatnot. But, and definitely narcotics is out. I imagine that across the board, because you don't want nobody breaking it up or nothing like that. But anyway, let's see. So tomorrow we'll go over the first 40 acres as a class, and then I'll organize a syllabus. And that information, you know, we'll cover in a Zoom call or what have you. But Robin, any other thing you want to add out before we log off for today?
No, I don't have it.
Okay. Let's find this outro music. Yeah, so Robin, you can have your own logo. I don't know what the name of your community is going to be yet, but think about it. You need a logo and a name, and that'll be a passport. If you don't have that passport, you got to show it when you come in, and it will be stamped. Now, granted, you can't fly out of the country with that passport, but we tell you that up front. But to get on our grounds or in one of our towns or villages, you're going to need that passport to get in. So, and Robin, I'll send you some videos on how to organize that. Let me see. All right, so that's it for today. You guys have a good rest of the day.